720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, my friends, we're talking all about the state of independent film in Chicago. In the early 1900s, Chicago had the greatest number of film production companies and filmmakers. But given the high demand of silent pictures at the time, a black market for film equipment and films themselves very quickly formed. And in retaliation of the conglomerate of major studios, independent film companies and filmmakers went west in search of fairer weather and to outrun the reach of the big studios. Of course, now Los Angeles is the center of the film industry thanks to them. But with film equipment and distribution becoming more and more accessible thanks to camera technology and to platforms like YouTube and Vimeo, it's shifting again to put more power than ever in the hands of independent filmmakers. Chicago, of course, is all over this. While for years, plenty of big budget projects filmed here for both film and television, plenty of independent filmmakers also cut their teeth here in the Windy City. And once they did, they moved west to that Southern California epicenter. In short, it became exactly the opposite of the early days when independent filmmakers sought to flee the tyranny of the big studios here in Chicago by going to Hollywood. So, for a while, big studios leaned heavily on Chicago once again in the 1980s, with a succession of Chicago-set films that put Illinois in the lead for money spent on film production, with films that introduced us to Ferris Bueller, to the Blues Brothers, to John Hughes and his Brat Pack, and other films like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and The Untouchables. Hollywood needed Chicago. But now, suddenly, we're seeing a lot of filmmakers and producers doing just fine with no plan to move west at all. Resources like Stage 18, a business incubator for filmmakers, launched here in Chicago, and other resources like Women in Film Chicago, and like many film festivals and independent cinemas that thrive here in Chicago and help create the community. Well, all of those things, they hint that Chicago is on the rise in the film world once again in new ways. Tonight, we're taking a look at the state of independent film in Chicago, not the set of Transformers that, you know, set off pyrotechnics all over Michigan Avenue, though that was pretty cool to watch, but the independent filmmakers committed to diversity, to underrepresented voices, and to investing in the scrappy and supportive community of Chicago independent film. We have some great guests joining us throughout the program to offer their insights. A filmmaker who just wrapped day one of filming her feature film here in Chicago. A filmmaker who turned down some Hollywood backing to come here and make one of his films independently. And we'll hear from the folks at the 48-Hour Film Project in Chicago, the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and SimFest. We'll talk to all those folks. Esteemed producer Joey Gelman will be the voice on the other end of the line when you call tonight, 312-981-7200, to share your comments throughout the show. But you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and contribute to the conversation by social media if you're feeling kind of shy. We'll be right back in just a bit to get the conversation underway. I am Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special on WGN. Tonight's episode, The State of Independent Film in Chicago. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. Tonight, we're talking all about the state of independent film here in Chicago. And my next guest joining us by phone, bless her, because she has been she's been working all day long, I think the first day of production for her feature film, and she was nice enough to join us by phone, which I really appreciate. But you know what? I met her earlier this week at an event at the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and her film screened there, and it was so darn funny. I knew that I had to talk to her after and get her on the program. So please welcome to the show Fawzia Mirza. Hi, Fawzia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing? I know you've had a long day kicking off production of your film.
Yeah, I'm good. I actually, I just took a shower. I went for a quick run to clear my head, and drinking fizzy water. Life is good.
Life is good. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks for being with us tonight. As you know, I'm so interested in this topic of independent film in Chicago because I've long bemoaned the fact that we lose so many talented people so quickly to Hollywood. But I've also really, really been paying very close attention as a filmmaker myself to the conversations around diversity in an identity in films. And you know, that's really been said. You know, we saw that erupt in a very big way with this hashtag #OscarsSoWhite, you know, that came out talking about bigger films. But I feel like this is something that independent filmmakers have long, you know, been aware of and been in touch with. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess for me, it's a matter of, you know, going back to why I got involved in making my own content in the first place. And I would say that the part of the reason was that, you know, as someone who is an actor, I wanted to, you know, play all sorts of roles and being in Chicago and being cast and be in stories that reflected things that were part of my life or people that I saw every day in stories that I understood and, you know, I'd heard. And I wasn't really seeing any of that reflected in the shows or in the media. And so instead of waiting to be cast and waiting for it to happen and waiting to see those stories or waiting for somebody to make it, I started making my own content. And, you know, it started with web series and kind of experimental short films and also just sketch videos almost of, well, if no, I'm going to cast myself and then I'm going to create kind of like these what I call defying the model minority. So characters who might be minorities, but also don't have to be the exemplary versions of human beings in order to be on television or in movies, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Right.
So, you know, someone who is South Asian or a lesbian or Muslim or brown skinned or any combination of any all of those identities can be as weird and flawed and confused as anybody else. They don't have to, you know, be an ideal human. So that was kind of the origin of all of it. And now when we look at diversity, I mean, I think the movie that we're making right now, Signature Move, which, like you said, did start production this morning at 3 a.m. call time. You know, one of the goals for me was if I value someone casting me and understanding and recognizing the importance of, oh, right, like, not all Muslims look like this. They also look like Fazia. Or not all lesbians look like this. They can look like Fazia. Or not all South Asians or Pakistanis look like Fazia. Can be any of those. Then I also value the diversity of the people I'm casting in the film. And so for Signature Move, you know, it's a story about a Pakistani woman, her mother, and also a love story between a Pakistani woman and a Mexican woman. For us, it was really important not to just cast, you know, we cast with PR casting in town, and we didn't want to see just, you know, well, insert generic Latina woman here. We wanted to be really authentic. And, you know, if we're telling stories, how do we bring the people whose stories are involved into the process? And so we cast authentically Mexican actors and actresses for those roles. And, you know, was it a little bit harder? Yes. It was harder because it took a little more work. It made the pool smaller, and it just changes. It changes, you know, as many choices of you as you have. But we feel that we got the best people for the roles. Another thing is thinking about the world we live in. If sometimes you might say, well, okay, here's a role for a woman, age, you know, she could be anywhere from 25 to 40, and if the race isn't specific to the story, then why not incur? Then I think it's our responsibility to try harder and to cast people who are people of color, and maybe if it's not even a woman, just a person, but women, people of color, trans people, gender fluid people, people who don't necessarily fit the, you know, Cosmo cover body type, and are the, you know, size fours. Or who are differently abled. And I think that when I think of diversity, it is all encompassing, and it means that we work a little harder, but I think in the end product, we get, we just get something that's better.
Yeah, right on. I love everything you're saying right now. You know, there was a piece in the Washington Post recently that I thought was really interesting, and it was the headline was, "Can a movie about women be just a movie?" And it was kind of looking at this idea that you know, there's a lot of conversation around diversity in film, and still, you know, yet we have the Ghostbusters movie coming out with all women, and a lot of people are really just kind of hanging on to that part, and that a lot of times mm-hmm. when we hear, you know, filmmakers, someone, there'll be a qualifier, right? Like a female filmmaker, something like that. You know, in your mind, what, I don't think we're there yet, but in your mind, what is it, what will it take for us to get to that point where it's just filmmaker, where we don't need a bunch of qualifiers as like subcategories?
Oh, man, who knows? Look how long it took women to get the vote in this country.
Right.
You know, I mean, and we're still struggling for Black Lives to Matter. We're, you know, we're still looking at, you know, Muslim people as all terrorists. And, you know, I mean, so there, anytime you're looking at groups and defining them all as, you know, you're looking at them and categorizing them, you know, large groups of people based off of a few, there are going to be these kinds of problems. So I feel like I don't know how the community as a whole is going to change, but I do believe in the power of the individual. And I believe in the power of the individual at every level. So, yes, it matters in Hollywood, right? But it matters even now as we're making our, you know, projects that we make and we put it on YouTube, or a film that we make and put it in the festival circuit, you know, screening at the Midwest Independent Film Festival, or, you know, they have the all-female filmmaker-directed film night. I mean, I think that's important. And eventually, these films, these indie films, the people involved, are the lessons they're learning, we're all learning at this level, we're going to carry on forward. And so I do think that the individual matters. And you do affect the people around you. I mean, I believe in that kind of energy. So, you know, a great example of someone I feel deeply affected by the work who she's doing in town is Samantha Bailey. She's making a project right now called Brown Girls. And for her, it was really important to, you know, there are, it's almost, I believe, all women and all people of color, both on screen and the crew. And that is a very powerful, very bold statement. Is she changing, you know, Hollywood? Not yet. Could she? Yes. Are the people who are working with her going to feel affected by that possibility of what she's doing? Of course they are. You know, so I feel like that matters. And I do think that, you know, like you said, female filmmaker, I joke about the fact that I only genderize or gender actor when it comes to two things, and that's age and weight. And unfortunately, there are things that no matter what year people want to say it is now and how times have changed, when we're looking at women, women are looked at differently. And when it comes to a woman's age as an actor, suddenly she's an actress and it matters. Maybe she's too old for that. I don't know. I don't know if everyone wants to have sex with her anymore. So we probably shouldn't put her on screen. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. And weight as well, you know, so, you know, women are always sort of actresses, not actors, are having to sort of, to strive a little extra harder to be this quote unquote ideal.
Mm-hmm, truly. And I wonder too, how have you found, Chicago as a filmmaking community? Specifically, why have you chosen Chicago to be your base?
Well, Chicago is where, before I was an actor and a creator, I came here for law school. So that's my origin story, has like a very complicated path. Don't judge me. But I like to say that I became an actor the hardest way possible, which is on a lawyer's debt, you know. But, you know, Chicago for me was a great place to start doing theater. And it's such a supportive, beautiful, hardworking, hustling community of people. And everyone cares about each other. And so that I think is really powerful. And the theater community, the comedy community, the stand-up, the improv, it's all here. And for me, that was really inspirational when I made my first web series, Kim Kardashian, because I thought, well, I know all of these amazing, funny women. Why don't I cast them? You know, maybe nobody, it's not just me, we're not, all of us are getting the exposure that we would love. So let's work together and bring that out. So I think there's a lot of talent here. And I think recently, there's just such a growing, vibrant scene. And it's, you know, there's still a long way to go. And, you know, but there are great people like, you know, Angie Gaffney, who's the line producer on our feature Signature Move, but she's started Stage 18, and she's, you know, one of the few female line producers who is wanting to stay here and, you know, change the narrative for who's making movies and who's producing them. I also think that people are hungry here. They're hungry to create and participate and be part of things. You know, if you make something, and the stories of Chicago have yet to be told, right? You know, that's why my feature that I wrote with Lisa Donato, my co-writer, who actually just flew in from Austin for the shoot like 2 minutes ago. She and I were talking about how the stories of these women in Chicago just aren't being told. So we have lots of stories of people in LA and people in New York, but the stories in Chicago, it's like, well, there's so many, but oftentimes they end up being like mafia stories, mob stories, horror stories, stories of maybe a comedy scene, but it's still a very white male dominated scene. And there are, we have the largest population of South Asians, amongst the largest populations of South Asians and Mexicans in the country in Chicago. And so for me, this is a very vibrant space to tell truth. And people are excited. You know, it's beautiful to see people in the community who are like, oh my gosh, yeah, of course you can use my shop. Of course you can use this bookstore. Of course you can, you know, use my house for this. Mm-hmm. We want to be part of it. And I think obviously you have, you know, more movies coming here, with you know, all the digital platforms. There's just so much more potential for not just, you know, racial, ethnic, religious diversity, but also just diversity of geography. You know, people are hungry for the story that's told in, you know, a city they don't hear about all the time, or a little town they haven't been to. So yeah, it's a really great place. And, you know, one of our producers on our film is Brian Hagelke from New City Magazine. And, you know, this is actually one of the things that he talked about, which is why he started the Chicago Film Project, and our feature is the first film in that project. But he said, you know, there's so much talent here, but why does it leave? Mm-hmm. And well, why, if somebody shoots something here, do they edit it elsewhere? Or why do they bring in the DP and the director, et cetera, and the actors when there's so much talent here? And so part of his goal with Chicago Film Project was, let's get as much as possible from Chicago and see what happens. And so that signature move is using the talent pool, is using the editing pool, is using the post pool, the directing pool. Jennifer Reeder's our director, you know, and so there is so much here, and sometimes people need to be just given the opportunity as well.
Yeah, truly, truly. Well, I know you've had a very long day, so I appreciate you being with us tonight. Where can everybody keep up about updates about the film that you're working on now and future projects?
Amy, everyone can go to Signature Move. It's signaturemovemovie.com. On Facebook, we're either Signature Move Movie or Signature Move Film. I should know this. But we're doing a lot of live videos from sets, which is really fun. And also, if you want to follow me, I'm at TheFawz, TheFawz. And my Facebook is Fawzia.Mirza. And it's crazy. And we have a long way to go yet. So there'll be some fun surprises to go.
Excellent. Well, we'll be cheering you on. And everybody, I will be sure and tweet out links to all the things that she just mentioned. So thanks so much for being with us tonight, Fawzia.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Amy. Really had a good time talking to you.
You bet. Have a good one. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and come back in just a bit, get you to news, all that good stuff, and keep this conversation rolling all about independent film right here in Chicago on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate you sharing part of your Saturday evening with me. My friends, tonight we're talking all about the state of independent filmmaking right here in Chicago, because you know what? There is a lot of stuff going on. And if you blink, you'll miss it. Don't overlook it, because it is awesome. And there's so much good stuff happening. And I'm really excited about my next guest, who came in and kind of on late notice too. We were talking earlier and all of a sudden it was like, come in, let's talk about this. So please welcome Matthew Aaron to the program. He is a filmmaker and has many fantastic stories to share with us, and I cannot wait to
Amy.
Hear them all.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for coming in. I'm so
glad you're here. I had a haul from Oak Brook area.
Hey, and you did it.
It was fun.
You made it with seconds to spare.
I like stuff like this. This is how I film, you know?
Exactly.
You got smaller crews than Hollywood. You got, like, you know, you have to do this kind of thing where it's like, you need to be here now. You're here now.
That's just make the way it work.
Yeah.
Just make it work. I know.
You know how it is.
I do. I do know how it is. So tell me about your projects, because you have made a real commitment to Chicago, and you have very intentionally chosen Chicago repeatedly. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, quick little background real quick, I guess, because it'll explain it all, is I had a podcast. I've done about 250 episodes of it, The Matthew Aaron Show. I met a lot of famous people doing it, became friends with a lot of people. I interview them for like an hour. They're very intense, like, interviews about the business. They're great for, like, college kids. If you want to be a filmmaker, you listen to these interviews because that's what it's about. I don't gossip or anything. We just talk about the business.
It's not like TMZ stuff.
No. And based off of that, I made good friends with Jacob Aranestes, who directed Mean Creek. And I made very good friends with Joe Carnahan, who's directed The Gray and A-Team and NARC and so on and so forth. Joe Carnahan and I made a pilot together that I starred in with Common and Dermot Mulroney and Kate Walsh and Lucy Lawless, and they all came in and did this for us, and it didn't get picked up, or maybe it will, who knows, but it kind of got my feet in the water. And then Jacob Aranestes and I sold a script to LD Entertainment, and they've done a lot of big films, and they wanted to get into TV. That also did not get picked up, and I started to realize the speed that they move in L.A., and it's no offense to L.A., but I work at what we like to joke around on my sets as Maddie Aaron speed, and not everyone's on Maddie Aaron speed. And so I had an opportunity to sell another film. I didn't write a script or anything. They just really liked the storyline, and it was about my life. Is I'm very adverse to labels, so I don't even like calling it an independent film. I like saying I make good films. I don't even like saying it's independent. So what happened was, I had a story about, you know, how it's fine in society for women to experiment with their sexuality, but it's taboo for men to.
Oh, interesting.
And I wanted to, like, flip the script on that and explore what it's like for a man to experiment in a straight community. And I got offered a good deal of money to do it. And I decided
to... In Hollywood.
Yes. I decided to turn down that money, moved back here, made it for $30,000. Made another film immediately after that for around the same budget, a little more. Those two films come out next year, The Way We Talk and Bromance. And then based off of that, I decide, okay, we can't just keep making small micro-budget films. We got to expand. So now we made this much bigger film, Landline, with the Cubs and Wrigley Field and Tom Arnold and Betsy Brandt and Nick Searcy and Jim O'Hare. And the reason I've chosen Chicago is I've been here outside of 4 years of L.A. my whole life. Went to DePaul University. This is my home. I love this city. And as you were talking about earlier on the show, it's magnificently underrepresented. And I saw The Boss earlier this year, and whether it's good or bad didn't matter. It was, I don't recognize the city these people film in when they do studio films. I recognize the tourist traps and the spots. I don't recognize the residential areas. We were saying when we saw it, where on Halsted are there trees? Like, they had a scene in the movie where it was Halsted and there's trees everywhere, and we're like, where is that? And we just saw something the other day, Bad Moms, that was supposedly Chicago, and they didn't even use a Google to, like, Google anything, like the suburbs they made up even. So I want to represent this city to the best of its ability. I feel that this place could be just as hopping as New York. I feel we could bring a filmmaking revolution to the city. So that's why I'm here.
Cool. Yeah. I like it.
Sorry, that long story short.
That's a great story.
Long story medium.
And my filmmaking brethren and sisterin, if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what will. I love this call for revolution that you're doing.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
I think it's important. I think what you're doing is important. I think there's a lot of great female filmmakers in this community. I make a very strong effort to at least have half my crew be female. I make a very strong effort. My number one grip and gaffer on Landline was female, and I've never seen someone do such a good job in my life. And that is just proof in the pudding that the gender of somebody does not matter when you're making a film.
You want the best people.
And all my films are led by LGBT characters, and the reason for that, too, is underrepresented. Mm-hmm. And underrepresented in mainstream filmmaking.
Yeah.
I understand indie filmmaking. There's a lot of LGBT films. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it more comfortable for straight people to see LGBT leads and not look at that as being gay or straight. Mm-hmm. Just look at it as being people that are leads in a film.
Yeah,
none of my films are about being gay. Mm-hmm. They're about gay people living in this world. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. And that's really important to me. Really important.
And so it's really, in a way, it's a, like an effort to just kind of normalize all types of human
beings. I feel that's the true way of progression. You know, there was a great article that I'm sure you've read about when can we stop considering females that make films being female films and not just films.
From the Washington Post.
Yes. And not just let's just call them films. And that's what I'm trying to do with the LGBT community as well, mm-hmm. where it's let's stop referring to it as gay film. It's film. Mm-hmm. Just because it stars gay men or gay women or it's film.
Just film.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And our next film, after Landline, I'm in editing on Landline now. I just did the first cut. And we're planning on selling that. And then my next film is even bigger. It's a 7-figure film that we're doing next summer that we're raising money for now. And, you know, the key is bring in big stars. Bring big stars to star in films with LGBT leads. Because that's going to make everybody, that's going to open the door for everyone to see the progression.
Yeah.
So that's what's important to me. So that's next. And I told you in our texting, it's the most Chicago film ever. I mean, the film office, I had them read it and they think it's the most Chicago film they've ever read. So I'm really excited about
that.
That's the dream project. Yeah.
Excellent. That's going to be great. Do you feel like the let me back that up even. Where do you feel like the disadvantages are in Chicago for a filmmaker?
Well,
outside of winter, obviously winter.
So I love winter, but winter is tough to film technically. There's technical problems with equipment. But even in summer, I had to shoot a couple scenes outside this year, and it was 100 degrees, and your monitors go out, and
I had it happen a week ago.
Yeah, so you know how it is. Yeah. It's just too hot. It's too cold. But I enjoy that. I enjoy that whole aspect. So for me, that's not a challenge. I guess for me, the two bits of advice I would ever give anyone, if you want to just step out of making micro-budget films here and get connected with the industry and bring in names and all that, is one, you probably do have to spend some time in L.A. Mm-hmm. You probably do. It's just the nature of the beast at this moment in time. You're not going to get many people from being just in Chicago to come from L.A. to film in Chicago. That's one. Unless you have money. You could throw money at people and they'll do it now, but you don't know these people and you don't know what they're going to bring to the roles. Right. I casted the last movie knowing Jim O'Hare is going to kill this role. I could have gotten someone bigger, maybe in name value, but Jim O'Hare is going to kill it. And that was important. The other piece of advice I have is just don't look at it as a challenge. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about with the summer and the winter and the hot and the cold.
Just do it.
Because you really don't have a choice. You don't have time to sit back and talk about, oh, this is going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, more. I always tell my other producers, more work, less talk.
Yeah.
That's the key for me.
For sure.
For me. And I think what people run into a problem is they want to make bigger films. They don't know how to do it. And I just have to strongly encourage you got to spend some time in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Film festivals.
Yeah.
Things like that. You got to network.
Yeah.
You do.
For sure.
Yeah. It sucks. But it is.
Well, I don't know that it does. I mean, I think that a lot of people have this kind of reluctance to promote what they're doing. Mm. But it becomes as detrimental, I think, as bragging when you're like this false modesty out of fear of not wanting to self-promote. I think it becomes really detrimental.
I don't like talking about myself, but it's a necessity.
It's a necessity.
I've realized I'm the face of what we're doing. And if I don't talk about it, if I Woody Allen it or Al Pacino it and not do interviews and not talk, it actually holds us back. It holds us back.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't let people realize you're out there and you're making films here. I think I got an email from Jimmy Dumont the other day. Jimmy Dumont, great actor. He was in Trumbo. He's worked with everybody. The scene that Jared Leto won the Oscar for is with him and Jimmy Dumont. They sent that scene into the Academy. That was it. And so Jimmy Dumont, terrific actor. He's in one scene of my movie, a cameo that's really pivotal, really critical. And Jimmy emailed me and he goes, Matt, you're going to get everybody you want with the budget you want because you're making Chicago a thing. Mm-hmm. And when you make Chicago a thing, when you make it like this thing that people need to get on board, but you can only do that through PR, through talking about what you're doing, then people want to come do your movies. Then they want to, because they feel like it's something special. Because you got to remember, the Hollywood and New York society is status chasing.
Sure.
And if they feel like Chicago is a status to chase, they're here. Mm-hmm. They're here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's important,
and
I think.
So how would you categorize the or characterize, rather, the feel of the Chicago filmmaking community?
You know, I think it's difficult for me because I don't really feel that involved in it. You know, mm-hmm. what's interesting is I work so much, I don't feel involved in the community as much as I'd like to be.
Yeah.
I feel like actually I'm more connected to the LA community than the Chicago community, which I want to be more connected to the Chicago community. That's why I'm working on very hard with this next film. But I do crew my whole crew from Chicago. I think the thing is, you know, we have a lot of people nowadays that want to do similar to what I'm doing, where you're the director, you're the producer, you're the writer, you're the actor. I think people honestly need to assess their talents and be like, where can I go help a project go from a $20,000 project to the next level? Where am I best utilized to do that? And I think it comes down to is we need to make more quality films and less quantity films. Mm. I think that's a problem. I really do. And not just in Chicago, mm-hmm. everywhere. There's too many films. Mm-hmm. We need to make the best films possible because it helps everybody in the long run. It helps everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, especially new coming, you know, mm-hmm. young filmmakers are so eager to build that reel and have a body of work so quickly that they'll kind of bang out two or three shorts really fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I know a handful of grips in town. I know 500 directors, you know, so it's like at some point in time, you need to think about like, okay, who can put some of their ego aside mm-hmm. and help in other arenas, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to use any name value I have as an actor to do, if you want your college project, I'll come in for a day and do it for free because I want to help you out. And it's about putting your ego aside and really helping the community. You know, everyone hits me up about, because we have Wrigley Field and the MLB and the Cubs in this movie, and they're like, how on an indie budget did you get that? And the fact of the matter is, it's a lot of people putting their egos aside and saying, this is the script we got to do. And the MLB loved the script. I mean, it's not as easy as paying a fee and getting them.
Yeah.
Put it that way. It had to be the right script, the right time, the right people. And we were very blessed and lucky. And, you know, it's things like that don't happen if all my producers are trying to make five different movies.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to work together on one movie. And it's easier said than done. I
sure,
get it. But
sure.
That's a problem, I think. Yeah.
We're talking with Matthew Aaron, filmmaker here in Chicago. And we'll be right back in just a bit. We're talking all about the state of independent filmmaking here in Chicago, although I might change that based on what you just said, Matt.
Uh-oh.
Based on, I like the idea where you said, I don't make independent films, I make good films. I like that. So we're talking about good films happening in Chicago at all levels. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. You are a fairy tale. 720 WGN. It's the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight. My friends, we're talking all about the state of independent filmmaking right here in Chicago. And we have a very special guest with us in studio, Matthew Aaron. He is a filmmaker who has very, very deliberately chosen Chicago. And we have been chatting with him all about his work and all the things he's got going, and especially a very, I think you said, the most Chicago movie ever project that you're working on.
We did Landline, and when we got Wrigley, I go, how do we top this? And that's what it was. And I said, you know, I love John Hughes. I'm inspired by John Hughes. Everyone in L.A. always compares what I do to John Hughes, of course. They always go to, like, the one thing they know. And I said to myself, how do we make a movie that's more Chicago than any John Hughes movie and more Chicago than Blues Brothers? Those were the two I said. And we're setting out to do it. That is the goal. Outside of making a great movie with great characters, but the goal is to really, this movie would be the movie everyone talks about when they think of Chicago movies. That's what I want.
I love it.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you need a radio host in there, I'm your guy.
I always need people. I put real people in my movies. In this movie, in Landline, I put in the real groundskeepers from Wrigley Field.
Excellent.
I mean, I put in a real cop. Like, I mean, I do some independent stuff, mm-hmm. you know, even though I try to make studio films at a lower budget. I do some independent things. I do.
Yeah. What was your start into filmmaking?
Oh, I've just been wanting to do this. I wrote my first script when I was 14. It's buried in the backyard somewhere. It's garbage. It's my first 10 scripts. For 10 years, they were all garbage. They're all garbage. I always tell people, they always write one script and they want to make a movie. And I'm like, oh, they're going to learn. So my start was, I started acting in like plays and stuff when I was 6. Mm-hmm. I never really got the acting bug, though. I really only started acting in my movies just because who else is going to do it for the price I do it for?
Sure.
To lead a movie. And that's why the next one's an ensemble and I get to direct a little more. So I've just been really wanting to do this since I was like 14. And I didn't get any good at it till I was 27. And I didn't make my first film till I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes some time for some people. You really have to stick to it,
yeah,
and grind it out.
Sure.
It's really what it is.
Sure. And then I think the part that a lot of people get caught up on, it seems to, the more filmmakers that I know, the more I hear this, that it seems like there's a kind of a sense of like not clamming up, but almost freezing at the prospect of having to do the business part of it.
Mm.
And I wonder if you could speak to that a bit, because I think people get very touched
on
the creative end.
Here's the deal, and I can talk a little bit about it, but I did something very smart. It's actually the thing I think I've only done that's the only thing I've done that's smart is I do these films with 3 or 4 blue collar guys on each film. They're all friends of mine that I grew up with. We pay for the films ourselves. We own them. And they're businessmen. They know business. So they run the business side of things. I do everything creative. Now, that being said, I mean, I do everything from, on this movie, Danny Farber came on as my AD. But usually I hire everybody,
mm-hmm.
from the line down. I hire PAs. Danny helped me on this last film. But yeah, I mean, I do every creative decision. I cast the entire movie. This time I worked with Claire Simon to get a real transgender person in the film,
mm-hmm.
that I needed to have, and I wanted to represent that truly, and I couldn't find anyone myself. So Claire Simon, who does all Dick Wolf shows.
Sure.
And she did High Fidelity, and she's
yeah.
the biggest casting agent in town. She helped me with that. But yeah, it's about delegating and finding people that are passionate to do it with you. I mean, I'm acquaintances with Joe Swanberg, and Joe mm-hmm. Swanberg's a pretty famous independent filmmaker in Chicago, and he does the business end of things too, and I could kind of tell it drives him nuts. So it's smart to like find at least one person
mm-hmm.
who's willing to do that side of things for you. Pat Tobias, who produces my radio show, he makes all my phone calls for me. Like, I want Tom Arnold, even though I know Tom Arnold, Pat makes the call. And it's professional, and it looks like you're running a business.
Yeah.
And it helps. It helps. This is all stuff. I have Steve Weirich. He does all my locations. He does all my, like, I have people that I get to delegate to. Lenny Cannata does all my law. Anthony Giuliano does all my business. And they're all producers.
Well, I think, too, there's a reluctance with independent filmmakers starting out. There, mm-hmm. There's not a reluctance, but a sense of, like, I need to wear all these hats myself. And while sometimes that, you know, that can be perfectly effective, especially for, like, a run-and-gun style
yeah.
of a shoot, you know, I think there is power in saying, I need someone who can fill this knowledge gap for me.
I think the smartest thing you can do, and I think you'd agree with me on this, Amy, is know what kind of film you're trying to make.
Yeah.
If you're trying to make a run-and-gun documentary, and it could be Amy and my sound guy, Nick Finelli, for instance, and someone else, you're good. You don't really need anybody else. You're fine. Just go run, gun, and do it. If you're trying to make a $250,000 film, $1 million film, you have to be smart about how you're going to do that, because you can even get that film made and it could all fall apart.
Sure.
Or if you don't have someone controlling the budget, you'll go over budget. And how are you going to finish that film? And a completion bond company comes in and throws you out. And you know, so there's like, you know, you need to know what kind of film you're going to make, and you need to staff appropriately. You have
sure.
to.
So for listeners right now, how can they best support Chicago filmmakers, in your opinion?
Man, you know, I wish everything was a little you know, I look at the Chicago Independent Film Festival and I love it. But, you know, they only show a few Chicago films a year and then the rest are Hollywood films. And it's kind of like, okay, can we try to like make it half and half a bit? I think it needs to come from the top. That's what I think it is. I think if you're relying on 20-year-old kids to change the way we're going to shape the Chicago film community, we're in trouble because you need leadership. And if the leadership isn't coming from the people with money that are 50, 60 years old that actually control what goes on in the Chicago film community, nothing's going to change. And that goes to the issue you fight all the time with female filmmaking. If the studios don't start hiring female directors with their boatloads of money, it's not going to change. It has to come from the top down. It has to be a trickle-down effect. And so if we're relying on kids fresh out of Columbia or DePaul to change this business, it's not happening. Not anytime soon.
And I think, too, it's important for the consumer to vote with dollars. Yeah. and go see those, you know, those smaller screenings and go to the festivals that we have here and do all those things. I think that really matters.
And I think the community's really open to it. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people that if you at least just tell them there's a Chicago film, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind, I'm going to fight with distributors about this. I understand Landline's probably a video on demand movie mostly, but if you don't do a week of screenings in Chicago, you're missing out.
Sure.
Like, you know, with the Cubs and with the Chicago aspect, people will crowd the Music Box to go see it.
Certainly.
I mean, that's how Chicago is. We're always coming out when we're aware. And the problem is you can't put out commercials, you can't put out whatever it is because you don't have the kind of money. So it's the awareness factor. But the community's ready for it.
For
they
sure.
really are. And that's not just PR fluff.
For
they're
sure.
ready.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a lot of interesting stuff on social media right now, too,
yeah.
that's been a really great platform for community building for
yeah,
a lot
of people.
And
that's one thing I stink at. So, like, you know, if you're good at social media, maybe you could find another way to, you know, make films based off of that. I don't know. That's uncharted waters for me. I'm
sure.
no good at that.
Sure. Well, you're good at lots and lots of other things,
oh,
and we
you.
Appreciate you
thank
being
you
with us tonight. Matthew Aaron, you can find out. Go to thematthewaaronshow.com. That's the podcast. And where else can people connect with you online and follow all the things you're doing? Or is that the best spot?
I guess on Twitter, there's the @ Matt Aaron Show. The rest is all like my private Facebook and Instagram and stuff. I mean, I add people, but like, I'm annoying. You don't want to follow me there.
Well, know thyself, I guess. Well, so everybody head to thematthewaaronshow.com to listen to his podcast. It is a great podcast all about filmmaking. There's so much passion and energy there that's really, really
Thank
great.
You.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Amy, so much.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and keep this conversation rolling all about filmmaking in Chicago. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm grateful to you for sharing your part of your Saturday evening with me. My friends, we have been talking about film in Chicago, and I was saying independent film in Chicago, but you know, I kind of got schooled a little bit by the last guest that it's not about independent or big studio. It's about good film, and that's what really matters. So we'll amend that a little bit. We're talking about good film in Chicago. Heck yeah, because it's good here. And there is a wonderful, wonderful community. And with that comes lots and lots of cool events, lots of festivals, lots of cool things. And so my next guest here in studio with us, which we are so grateful to have with us, we have, you know him as Jim Jordan on NBC's Chicago Fire, but he's also the guy behind the Midwest Independent Film Festival. He does some stuff at Sundance, and he writes the column called The Call Sheet at Screen Mag. You can go there, screenmag.com. That's the one. Mm-hmm. That's the guy. Anyway, you also know him from The Bill and Wendy Show, Mike McNamara. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Hey, fun. Let's get into it. Let's get
talk
into
about
some
films.
Film action.
We've got lots to talk about. There's so
Great.
Much here.
I'm
There's
ready.
So just recently, I got to experience the Midwest Film Festival, which was so awesome. Sorry, Midwest Independent Film Festival.
That's all right.
And
I appreciate it.
It was so awesome and so fun. And I was there and I spoke on a panel on which was really fun and really cool.
Yeah. And
it was
just so you guys know, our fest is all year round, every first Tuesday.
You
and
beat
so
me
we
to
just
it.
Had ours a few days ago on that Tuesday. And right, we made you do it, our buddy Justin Kaufman. I was like, help. I need
made
a great panelist.
Yeah, you really twisted my arm. Sit on a panel with Julia Sweeney and
right
talk about some
Live.
Stuff.
Yeah. In. I was like, what? I'm in. What do you need me? All right, tonight,
like,
6 o'clock.
I was wondering if you would like to, and I was like, sure.
Yep,
fine.
In. Let's go. Let's do it.
And she is delightful.
Amazing.
And she is working on lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, she's going to have a feature that, you know, that she wrote, that it would be her feature film directorial debut. And a lot of people don't know. She lives in the Chicagoland area, and she wants to shoot that. So that's going to be coming up. And I didn't realize that Julia was a writer on Desperate Housewives. And
yeah,
and
all
so
the
many
things.
Great things.
She's
so
done so many things. And her TED Talk. I love her TED Talk. It was so good.
No doubt about it. So it was you. That was a great having you as part of that producers panel that opened the night, and then we followed that up with all films, all made in Chicago and the Midwest, that were all directed by women, which is we definitely hope to see more of course. And
sure.
I mean, these were just amazing films. Didn't matter who the director was; those were amazing.
They
films.
Were all wonderful.
But it's great for people to know that, hey, by the way.
Also,
if they happen to be directed by women,
yeah.
So let's just leave gender and race and religion and income level all out of it, and
yeah.
let's just put the best films up there.
And I mean, kudos to you, because at the end of all the screenings, all the filmmakers got up in front of the room and, mm-hmm. and were having a conversation and a panel discussion, and it really wasn't about being female.
No.
It was really just about, tell me about the work you're doing. And I really loved that for a night all about female filmmakers, we didn't talk about that very much.
And I think that's important, because, if it went that way, it went that way. Do you
sure.
know what I mean?
Sure.
It was more about, let's just celebrate these great filmmakers that we have in Chicago.
Yeah.
And tonight we just happen to be celebrating great filmmakers that are women.
Yeah.
And that are going to keep making great films. And there's one that's shooting right now, actually, called Signature Move.
She was on the show. She kicked off the show with us.
Oh, she did kick off the
yeah,
show?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be in with Fazia. All right.
She kicked off the show. She called in. She had a very long day. She had a 3 a.m. call time.
Oh, right. They started shooting
yeah.
last night. This morning at 3 a.m. So it's very, and so that's shooting right now. That's directed by Jennifer Reeder with
yeah.
Fazia, who everyone heard from. So, you know, and just so everyone knows that's tuning in, the Midwest Independent Film Festival, it's every first Tuesday. It's at Landmark Century Center Cinema over at Diversity and Clark.
Great
we
space.
Only show films that are made in Chicago and the Midwest. So we're the only film festival in the country where if it's not made here, we're not showing it. So it's really kind of put us, hopefully, at kind of the center of the filmmaking community here in Chicago. And it's our 12th year, so we've really been able to kind of see this community develop and grow.
Yeah.
And I really think it's a special time in Chicago, and we've got a lot of great things on the horizon.
And what was the origin of that festival?
Oh, man, that's interesting. You know, it actually started as a very casual downtown in the kind of upstairs in a nightclub with a makeshift kind of screen on the wall
yeah.
where people would get together and just show their short films. A guy named Michael Quilford and another gentleman named Mark Battaglia founded that. And then Mike Quilford and I went on to, I kind of started helping those guys out. And then Mike Quilford and I went on to co-found the Midwest Independent Film Festival. At some point I get in there and I kind of shake things up, and I'm like, let's go skyward. Let's do it. If we're going to do it, let's really do it.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, this was in 2004, 2005. People thought we were crazy to have a film festival where we're only showing films made in Chicago and the Midwest. They're like, how are you going to have enough? How are you going to have enough films to show? And we kind of looked at them and said, well, we haven't quite figured that one out yet, but we're going to go for it. And let's see, this might last 3 months or, you know, here we are 12 years later. And
yeah.
there's been great films, as you got to see, people come and pack the house.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of support for it. And I heard the guest before, you were asking him, you know, how can people support mm-hmm. Chicago filmmakers? Because I think people are tuning in right now. They're like, well, how can I support Chicago filmmakers? And I always tell people, the best way to support Chicago-made films is to buy Chicago-made films. Buy the films that you want to see made. If you want to see more films directed by women, then you should be buying films directed by women. That's
yeah.
your vote, and that's
yeah.
a vote that counts. If you want to see more films made in Chicago, then you should be out there buying every film that's made in Chicago. And these days, it's very easy to do. You don't have to go to Best Buy. You know, you can go to our YouTube page for the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and we have a whole slate of films that you can go in one click. You can buy them right there. They're all made in Chicago and the Midwest. So that's
yeah.
my little rant.
It's a good one. Well, it's a worthy one. Well, I mean, we do vote with our dollars, right? We really do.
Vote with your dollars.
And,
you really do.
And it matters when we, you know, to go to those small events, and it go, you know, when you hear about them, to all the festivals, to all the like little pop-up things with film schools. And I mean, it matters to go to those things.
It all matters. And really, when you see a film that's made in Chicago on iTunes and you buy it, that is tallied. guys, when you go on iTunes and you buy a film, I'll give you a documentary right now that's out there. It's called For Grace. It's a spectacular documentary.
Yes.
If you don't like documentary and you want drama, there's one called Henry Gamble's Birthday Party. If you go there and you buy that right now, that matters. That has an effect on its placement on iTunes. It's ammunition for those filmmakers to say, hey, we should be on Netflix, or hey, shouldn't we be here, or shouldn't we be in theaters? And it's also ammunition for those filmmakers to say, hey, we want to make our next feature in 2017, and look how well we did on iTunes. That matters. Your vote really matters with your dollars.
I think, too, I make a habit of going to Kickstarter and Indiegogo and searching, like, what's happening in Chicago?
Yes.
Who's doing something that is cool? Because I've been there, and I've been a filmmaker on Kickstarter and stressing those 30 days and freaking out.
And our friends and family just hate us. They're like, I donated. Just please.
You know what? I put in so much pre-production of my Kickstarter that it was okay.
Yeah.
Because I decided I don't want everyone on Facebook to hate my guts in 30 days. So I need to figure out what am I going to say every day for 30 days. It's not like, hi, can you give me some more money?
Right. Please help. Please still help.
And I was, and even until I ended up surpassing my goal and getting funded beyond it.
Oh, wonderful.
But even up until that minute, I was really stressing it. But I think the good part is it forces you. I think this is a really undervalued aspect of crowdfunding, is that it really forces you to focus about exactly what you're going to do. I had a great idea, and I knew it inside and out, but I knew it much better at the end of those 30 days.
Right.
For having talked about it so much. Because you have basically thousands of boards of directors, right? At that point,
sure.
It's like that.
That's really cool. And, that's just such a great point. You know, friends, if you're listening, just go online and just go to Kickstarter or Indiegogo and just search Chicago.
Yeah, lots going on.
And you know what? Just pledge to one of them. Just put
in
25
bucks.
Just 50 bucks, whatever. Who knows? You might not like the film. You might not. Who knows? Just do it. Do you know what I mean? What's this? You're doing something positive. You
totally.
Don't need to toot your horn. Oh, look what I just did. Just go in there and do it. That matters. The amount that it matters is, honestly, you can't even measure it. We just had a Kickstarter as well. And I'm going to throw one thing out there that you might disagree with me on.
Oh, here we go.
But liking a film's page on Facebook is not supporting a film, all right? Can we just get that straight? It's not supporting a film. If someone asks you to support their film and you go and say, I liked your Facebook page, I need to tell you, that is not supporting a film.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Now, that's just
if you go and like their Facebook page, hey, that's great.
But all you're saying is, I've consented to get your content.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I'm aware of your film. If you like them on Facebook, you're saying, I'm okay being aware of your film.
I acknowledge you.
Acknowledged. I hit the acknowledge button on you. Great job. Your independent film in Chicago has been acknowledged.
Right.
But people, my friends, if you like a post or you share a post or you like their page, that cannot be the end.
Right.
Of your support. You can't walk away and be like, I did my part. Because you haven't yet.
True.
It's a start.
It's a start. I did get some very heartfelt notes during the course of my Kickstarter that said, hi, I'm flat broke, but I want to help you. So I'm just going to promote you. And they were sharing my posts and talking about it to their networks and really helping me promote it, which that's cool.
Absolutely.
Because that helped drive
cash. If you're spending, if you like their Facebook page and then you keep going back to their Facebook page and you keep liking it and sharing the posts and trying to support, and we have a lot of people that do that with the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
Sure.
We have a whole group of volunteers that's what they do, and we have other folks that just – and I know them. Steve Biorgen, I could tell you all their names. Jenny Moy, there's a whole bunch of them that just – I know it. They're going to share everything we do, and that means a lot. It's just – and that's such a great point. If you don't have money to put into a film, you don't have money to buy the film – Just give it more than one click.
Hustle.
I think is what we're saying.
Yeah,
you know, if you really just put in an effort for it.
Yeah, and so the Midwest Independent Film Festival has you can be kind of a member.
Sure.
You can support that. Talk to me about the membership part.
You know, we should probably charge more for our membership, but we're okay with it. We're not really in it to make money. We just want to kind of stay afloat and keep this community strong. It's really fun helping to build this Chicago and Midwest filmmaking community. The membership, basically, membership start as low as $60 for the whole year, and you get tickets to all the first Tuesdays with the Midwest Independent Film Festival all year round. You get a full 12 months of First Tuesdays for that $60. And then there's different levels that I think go up to 150. But one person, $60, and you can go all year round to all of our events, and you'll get tickets to other events.
So it ends up being like $5 a thing.
It's a little crazy, yeah.
You might want to jack that up.
We might. You just got done telling me that you have, people that are reaching out to you on Facebook. They're flat broke. We're like, you know what? Can you afford a burrito? Okay, then you can come out to the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Or you can volunteer with us, and you know what? We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Nice. Excellent. All right, my friends. We're talking with Mike McNamara. You know him from, he is Jim Jordan on NBC's Chicago Fire. He's also the guy behind the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and we're talking all about the cool stuff that he's doing and how you can support local filmmakers. We'll be right back in just a bit to continue this conversation on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us, and thanks for spending part of your Saturday with me. I'm most grateful to you for that. My friends, we're talking all about filmmaking in Chicago, specifically independent filmmaking, but you know what? I was schooled a little bit earlier in the show that maybe I should not say independent or big budget or big studio. I should just say good, which is fair. So I'm down with that. So we're talking about good filmmaking in Chicago. I'm on board with that, definitely. And we are talking with our esteemed studio guest right now, Mike McNamara. He is from NBC's Chicago Fire, and he is the guy behind the Midwest Independent Film Festival, which I had the pleasure of attending recently and speaking on a panel, and it was super fun. It is a cool deal, you guys, because you don't have to wait all year long, like Sundance and all those guys. This happens every single month right here in Chicago, and it celebrates independent filmmakers from the Midwest, which is super cool. And they were great.
Oh, they're just, these are great films. I would put our shorts programs, our films up against
anybody.
Any other shorts program all over the country.
Yeah.
And I help out on the screening committee for Sundance. I help out with Austin Film Festival, which is a great film fest in Texas. And I would put our shorts program, that one that you saw on Tuesday, all amazing films, all directed by women, all made here. I would put that up against any shorts program around the country.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's important because, Chicago's known for a lot of things, and it's but that film, amazing music, improv, comedy, all the wonderful architecture. But the film community has kind of, I don't want to say we've taken a backseat, but we've been kind of the last kind of group to come through and really start to shine. And I think that's finally starting to happen. Mm-hmm. And really, when I look at film, when you look at you're building a film community in Chicago, when you're building a film society, I look at other regional film communities like Austin, Texas has a real vibrant one. What happens there is writers, directors, actors, they all start working on each other's stuff. And they're just running around week to week, working on each other's stuff. They're wearing a different hat on each one. And that's what's starting to happen in Chicago.
Yeah.
I'll talk to a friend who's a producer, and he's like, yeah, I'm ADing this feature, and then I'm directing my own, and there's this other screenplay I wrote that I'm developing for next summer. And that's what's just happening all around. We're all really starting to develop a tight group that's all helping. We're all rising up together, and that's really what it's about.
Well, you know what I think is so cool about Chicago is because, and I think this extends to the literary community and comedy and so many creative endeavors here, is that the community is so very supportive, and so there's not that cutthroat feel to it at all. It's
not
very
at all.
Much like, you know what, I can't make it, but I know someone who can, who would be great for that thing you're doing. There's so much of that in all the creative communities, and there's a lot of crossover, which is why there's Lit Crawl is coming up in a few weeks. And I was interviewing the women behind that earlier, and they were talking about how they realized how much crossover was happening between the literary community and the comedy and the performance. So many actors were also writers, and so many writers were also comedians. And so they said, screw it, let's just put them all together in this one big thing. And so I think I think the same thing with the film world here.
Sure. And what you say about that crossover, we have such a vibrant theater community. Some of the best theaters in the world are here in Chicago. Some of the best actors, some of the best directors. One of the films that we saw on Tuesday, it's called Parallel. It was by Mia McCullough. Mia McCullough is an award-winning, very well-known, renowned playwright here in Chicago. Well, she finally made the jump as a screenwriter and director to the screen. That's happening more and more. We have Steppenwolf, wonderful theater company, obviously world renowned in Chicago. They're starting to move into films with Steppenwolf films, little by little, brick by brick. There's a really good film called The Last Rites of Joe May, one of my all-time favorites, made in Chicago. One of Dennis Farina's final films, leading role. He is spectacular in it. All shot in Chicago, West Town, all over the place. You can go buy it online right now. But, you know, we're starting to see that crossover between theater and film. We're also starting to see a crossover between, because I, you know, when we were building the Midwest Independent Film Festival, we're almost in a way trying to, like, how can we keep building this community? Where are these other areas of creatives that we can bring together? A lot like what you're talking about. And we're like, well, we have one of the most vibrant advertising industries in the country. And so we started to do nights where we're celebrating short films and music videos and things from people who make commercials for a living. And now you have, you actually have people. There's a gentleman named Sterling McLaughlin, who's a creative director at Ogilvy & Mather. He has a feature called Cold War that you'll be seeing soon. Another guy named Brian Fox, who's a producer at Leo Burnett. He has a feature called Bad Alex that's going to be coming out. So we're really starting to see people from all the communities start to jump in. And like you said, we're all supporting each other. There isn't any territorialism. Mm-hmm. It's like, nope, come on in. Let's do it.
And I think, too, it's very much the case, as you were describing in Austin. Like this person's, you know, gopher might be this person's assistant producer.
Yep.
And this person might be the gaffer, but also the director of this. And there's so many, just wearing of so many hats.
And we love it. And what's cool about the Midwest Independent Film Festival is we've started to really become a part of helping to point these filmmakers in the right direction. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other features that are shooting here right now, which they aren't really, they're kind of staying under the radar, but they, you know, they're Chicago people that live in LA. They came back and they said, you know, I've been out of the loop for a little while. And I said, well, my buddy Tim is a great for, you need a first AD? Great. My friend Tim can direct you. He's a first AD. If he's not available, he'll direct you to someone.
Yeah.
He can find you the camera. He can find you this guy. Here's makeup. Do you know what I mean? So we're really starting, the film festival is kind of helping to point people in the right direction and let people know that when you come to shoot in Chicago, that you're going to have a great shoot. We're going to have a full crew for you. You're going to be supported. Even if you spent the last decade in LA, we don't care. If you come back home and shoot your film here, we're going to make sure it's a great production. So.
Yeah. And with things like Stage 18 and all that, I'm really hopeful that we can keep more good talent here.
I think we can too. And you know, those TV shows are a big deal.
Yeah.
They're a big deal. Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Med, now Chicago Justice.
Yeah.
You know, again, we always have to, you know, Dick Wolf, if you want to be mayor of Chicago, we'll work
cool.
it out. We got it.
We'll
whatever.
It out,
pick
man.
A title, man. We got you. There's just so many people that have, you know, really fought to bring film, to bring those TV shows here to Chicago. A lot of people don't know. They might, but Empire shoots here in Chicago 100%. It's set in New York. It shoots here. That's a big deal. There's a couple other TV shows. The Exorcist. There's a remake, a reboot of The Exorcist that's going to be coming out. That just started shooting in Chicago. There's another police drama called APB that just started shooting in Chicago. So these happening, these make it so that you can make a living in the on-camera world, whether it's behind the camera or in front of the camera, in Chicago. So that's what allows you to stay here and also make independent films and also work on those bigger budget movies.
Yeah. I think those are so great, and that it is I'm very hopeful that we can be a place where it's no longer a place to just come and cut your teeth.
Exactly.
And that's how it was for so long. That it was like, go to Chicago,
such a great
get
point.
Your reel together, and then get out of there. And
it's like, that's so true.
But it's really fun here.
Yeah, that's really, that would happen so many times. Oh, I made a short film. Okay, that's my calling card. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm going. You know, the other good thing is the technology is much more accessible.
Yeah.
You know, anybody listening right now, you can make a film. And you can make it look pretty good.
Yeah.
You can make it look really good.
I mean, there's several films now that have been, they've been shot on iPhones.
Yeah. Tangerine is one. And they're beautiful. And, we're at a point where you can look at, you know, where you grew up or, you know, income level, things like that. We're able to level the playing field to some extent to where it's, hey, if you've got a good script, if you're talented, if you know how to tell a story, if you've got a memorable, unique, compelling story to tell, there you can get that film on the screen and you can hopefully shine through.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's even, I think, a sense of forgiveness of some technical stuff.
Sure.
If your story is just so interesting and so unique.
That's such a great point. I told you I watch a bunch of films now. I help out screening films for Sundance Film Festival. So you're seeing everyone.
The good, bad, the ugly. Warts and all.
The good, bad, the ugly, and the really ugly. I mean that in the nicest way.
Sure.
You know, you'll see films where you see, you know, they just didn't have the story there. Or, but you'll see others where it's like, well, there's stories there, there's scripts there. I mean, think about this, guys, that are listening in. Do you care about the people that are on the screen? That's what I'm always looking for. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? The camera work wasn't great. You know what? This or that. I cared about the people on the screen. I was invested from start to finish.
Or conversely, wow, this is so beautiful, and every single frame could be could be wall art, but I don't care about these vapid characters at all. I don't care.
I've forgotten about you immediately.
I don't even remember your name. Right. And I don't want to. Like that, then there's that too.
I'm unliking you on Facebook just for that.
Well, I mean, you bring up social media, which I think has played such a big role in that, right? And and technology platforms. I mean, Vimeo is so, there's so many beautiful films on Vimeo right now.
So many beautiful films. And Vimeo on Demand is actually a great way. That's a great program where, you know, filmmakers that are self-distributing their films can do that through Vimeo on Demand. And they get, I mean, almost the majority of that purchase money, and that can really be, we open it up so that if Amy Guth makes a wonderful documentary short and you put it on Vimeo Demand, I mean, you can really kind of pay for that film and finance your next one. That's what needs to happen. So we kind of take this distributor, middleman, what have you, out of it and really make it so that the filmmakers can really, you know, make a living, like selling your paintings or whatever you do.
And doing all the things. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's all those things.
It's all those things.
Well, everybody, go look up Midwest I almost said international. Sure. Midwest and international.
Why not? It happens a lot.
Midwest Independent Film Festival, mm-hmm. and support it. It is a great, great thing. Again, it is like a film festival every single month that you get to go to.
Yeah.
And for, what'd you say, $60, you can be a member.
You can be a member every first Tuesday of the month. And we treat every first Tuesday like it's opening night for a major film festival.
You, I can
you
vouch
saw
for
it.
That.
You
it,
saw
I
it.
I saw it firsthand.
This past Tuesday,
and it is great. And it was packed.
Jam-packed. We, you know, I come from a storefront theater background, so, and I've been in just about every theater here in Chicago as an actor, and, you know, we had those nights, those Thursday night shows, where if you had more cast members than audience members, they canceled the show, you know, and I've been in those shows where you look out there and you're like, okay, we got three people out there, we're calling it, you know, so when we started this fest 12 years ago, I was just like, no matter what, we're packing the house for it, and 12 years later, we're selling out every month, and hope you guys will come join us.
Awesome. Mike McNamara, thanks for being with us tonight.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and all those good things and be back in just a bit. And we will continue this conversation all about film in Chicago on 720 WGN. We got to let that song play for a minute. It's one of my favorites. Precious by Depeche Mode. It's a good one. I write to that song. It's Amy Guth, and you're listening to the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. We are talking all about the state of independent filmmaking right here in Chicago, because my friends, if you don't know, you should know. There's so much stuff going on. And part of that, part of this you know, groundswell of so much activity has a lot to do with the big TV shows that are filming here. And there's so much stuff. There's also a lot of very, very cool festivals. And a little bit earlier today, I spoke with Jerry Vassalatos, who is the city producer of the 48-Hour Film Festival, which I have the pleasure of being a judge for this year. I was a judge last year. It is a really fun event in which you do exactly as the title implies. You make a film start to finish in 48 hours. Literally, Friday afternoon, I will hand you a genre and a title, or not a title, a genre and a prop and a character name and some stuff like that. And on Sunday night, you got to hand me a film. And then I'm going to judge you for it. It's going to be good. So anyway, a little bit earlier today, we talked to Jerry Vassalatos. I'm joined now by Jerry Vassalatos. He is the city producer of the 48-Hour Film Festival here in Chicago and a filmmaker himself. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Everybody who listens to me regularly has heard from Jerry before about the work that he does. So tell us a bit about the 48-Hour Film Festival. I mean, I think it is such a great thing. I'm so glad to be involved again this year as a judge, like I was last year. But, you know so much more about it than I do. I just kind of see the end result with all the films. But you see the behind-the-scenes part and the results after that. Tell us about that a bit.
Well, it's an interesting angle coming from the perspective of an independent filmmaker myself, because I've made films in the past. I did a short film, it was on many, many years ago, it was on Lifetime Television, and I kicked around about 10 years in L.A., but while I was out in Los Angeles working primarily as an editor, I heard about the 48-Hour Film Project. I was invited to join a team that was competing, and this was kind of in the early days, so they brought me on as an editor, And what the $40 film project does is it challenges independent filmmakers to write, produce, direct, and edit and present a short 7 to 8 minute movie within 48 hours. They have a filmmaking weekend. So I took part in this in Los Angeles, where we were very spoiled because, you know, a lot of industry people were taking part in the competition. But it opened my eyes even more as an independent filmmaker that you don't always have to worry about, do I have the money? Do I have the resources? If you get a gang of people together to make a movie, as this competition kind of structures people to do, you can knock off a movie in 48 hours. And if you get together with your filmmaking friends, you can usually produce something with some, you know, decent production value.
Truly.
So
I mean,
the following year, it's amazing. I mean, it's a great learning experience in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I was really blown away last year by, I really didn't know what to expect, but when I saw them at the screening, I was just really blown away by very high production value, very cinematic, beautiful shots, and so creative. I mean, I think that's kind of probably the benefit of doing something under the gun like that, with doing it in 48 hours, is I think you don't have time to overthink it. You have no choice but to just kind of make a decision and go with it. And I think a lot of beauty can come from that when you have no choice but just to operate from gut.
Oh, absolutely. And back when I was doing it in the, it was the early 2000s, we weren't fully transferred over to digital yet. So people were shooting on tape and having to do, you know, linear editing. And some people were editing on, you know, digital, like Avid, nonlinear editing systems. I think Final Cut had come out at the time. But then the following year, the same producer asked me to come back and do another one with him, and I got to direct that one. So then I had two under my belt. Moved back to Chicago in 2007, and the 48-hour film project is a national, actually it's an international filmmaking competition. So every city in the U.S. competes. So when I came back to Chicago, I decided I'm going to put my own team together and do my own weekend film shoot. And I ended up competing six times until I kind of retired from it, because I thought, okay, this is great, but I'm a little bit burned out by it, which sometimes happens to some filmmakers who always do the 48-hour filmmaking competition. But a couple of years ago, the city producers previous to me, who were friends of mine, were kind of hanging up their hat on it, and they asked me if I'd like to come on as the city producer, because they knew I was very passionate about the 48-hour film project as a rite of passage for filmmakers, to encourage filmmakers, if you haven't done something yet, participate in this. Or if you have done something, you know, keep your skills sharp by doing something in 48 hours of some quality. So I came on last year as a city producer, and I'm doing it again this year. And we've got, I think right now, 40 Chicago teams signed up to participate in our filmmaking weekend, which comes up August 26th and the 28th. And the benefit of participating is not only coming out of it with a great short film, but we're going to be screening at the Music Box Theater September 11th and 12th. And then we have our awards at the Music Box on the 15th. And whoever wins Chicago goes on to compete nationally against films from other cities. And then the U.S. winner competes against international cities with the shot at in the screen at the Cannes Film Festival. So, you know, there's some steps to get there, and it's a long shot. But still, I think that, you know, I think there have been some U.S. teams who have ended up screening in Cannes as a result of participating locally, you know, and then tiering themselves with the national and then the international competitions.
Well, someone's got to win. Might as well be someone from here is what I think about that.
Yeah, I think so right. too. The Great of Chicago went on to it.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting to me about this moment we're in Chicago is I think the same thing is happening in the film, independent film world, as what happened with publishing and the literary world, is that, you know, there was a time when it was only about the West Coast but definitely about the East Coast and the publishing and literary world. And then suddenly people started to realize, you know what, Chicago is not a flyover city. There's a lot of very scrappy people doing very good work. And when the there was a crisis that hit the literary world, in that a lot of independent distributors kind of went belly up or had some crisis. And therefore, a lot of small publishing houses went belly up because they had to buy back inventory from these distributors. And suddenly people realized, you know what? All these smaller publishers in Chicago were relatively unaffected because they were already in a DIY mode. Do you get that sense from Chicago that we have this kind of throughout different genres and or not genres, but different mediums of creativity, that we have this kind of scrappy, do-it-ourselves kind of way that makes that is appealing to people that are into just kind of doing it themselves and getting it done in kind of this, like, hey, let's put on a show in the barn kind of way.
Yeah. Well, I think doing your own content has become so much easier now with the digital age. HD cameras they're not that expensive to get your hands on. Everybody can cut on Final Cut Pro or Adobe Premiere. So it's leveled the playing field for people being able to create their own content. And with platforms like Vimeo or YouTube, anybody can see your work now, along with submitting it in festivals. I think from another perspective of filmmakers that want to be a little bit more ambitious and fund their projects, you know, and I know, you've got crowdfunding platforms where, you know, if you present your case professionally, you can get people to back your projects and raise money on platforms like Kickstarter or Indiegogo to cover your film budget. So, yeah, I think it's like we're self-publishing not written material, not literature, but our own video and film content now. And I think if you've got the will and you can get your hands on a good HD camera and some other people who've got some experience and share your passion, I've seen videos that have gone on to Vimeo, short films that were demo pieces for directors that have ended up getting those directors studio deals because the strength of their short film being distributed on Vimeo to the entire world got the attention of somebody in Hollywood who said, this is a great short movie, can you extend it to a feature, or what else do you have that we can look at as far as scripts or projects that you want to do? So it's really figuring out how to leverage exposure from something that you produce as an indie filmmaker and get seen by the eyes of the world to take the next step.
Yeah, truly. And I think on that note of cost, I think not only does crowdfunding benefit the filmmaker, obviously, because it's not about having to make this big pitch to a large studio anymore. You can raise money to make a film. And as you said, you and I both know, because you and I have both done that on a Kickstarter,
yeah.
on a crowdfunding platform. But you know what my experience with raising money for a film on Kickstarter was that it made me refine my idea wonderfully. It, you know, because you have to talk about it so much during that crowdfunding period that it becomes like pitch meetings, but only to, you know, thousands of people. And in my case, it really, really helped me. I mean, I had a really specific idea and a plan when I launched it, but it made it even more just kind of laser focused by the end of that, which I think is also a really interesting side benefit of crowdfunding.
Yeah, it helps you hone your pitch skills because, you know, people talk about the elevator pitch. With crowdfunding platforms, we have a little bit more time to produce a 2 to 3 minute video. But if you do meet someone in real life and you've got that quote-unquote elevator pitch where you need to really get someone into your idea to be supportive or perhaps network with, you really do have to fine-tune what you're communicating so that they get it and that they can get excited and enthusiastic and interested and willing to support you or participate in whatever way that they can with, you know, the project that you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So when you first started in filmmaking, if you think back to the very first times you stepped on a film set and you were working on projects, what advice would you go give your younger self then, based on what you know now?
Well, I had the opportunity coming out of Columbia College to network with some people here in Chicago that got me on the film set of John Hughes as a production assistant and a location assistant. And even though I'd come out of Columbia with a pretty good working technical knowledge, getting on a film set working at the lower rung of the ladder completely opened my eyes to how the pros do it logistically. And those couple of years working as a production and location assistant on a couple of feature films here in Chicago really prepared me when I kind of stumbled into the funds to do a movie that I produced and directed that ended up on Lifetime Television way back in 1994. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't have produced and directed that thing unless I had the experience of seeing what it was like to work on a big film set. So I would advise two things. When you get the opportunity at whatever low level to get onto a film set to work, to observe, take it. Even if it's interning for nothing or if it's, you know, the lowest pay possible, get on a film set so you can see how it's done, network, you make your connections, and when the time comes that you hopefully do have your project that gets the attention of the world. If you're in Chicago, immediately try to make plans to get out to Los Angeles. Because one of the things that I learned, even after having produced, pretty successful short film that ended up on Lifetime. We must have had a million viewers. It broadcast in 1994. Didn't have any big names in it, but it had a national viewing audience. I didn't get out to Los Angeles before 1996. And despite the fact that I'd had that film that was broadcast as a Lifetime original movie under my belt, people were like, well, what have you done lately? So I thought, I didn't realize 2 years was that long a period from, you know, getting something seen by the world and then getting out to Los Angeles. But you really need to strike when it's hot. And if you've gotten some buzz or some attention, try and get out to Los Angeles to ride that wave so that, you know, it's topical. It's in the moment when people are enthusiastic and paying attention. And sometimes, despite, you know, the success that you've had, and I'm very proud of that project, it was very discouraging that, you know, finally getting out to L.A., because it wasn't something that recent, people were not as willing to pay attention to it. Or, you know, the projects I brought out to Los Angeles with me to develop as a director. So get your experience on a real professional working film set. And ultimately, although we can do things here in Chicago, the business of film is in Los Angeles. And that's where, you know, aside from crowdfunding and looking for some investors here in Chicago, that's where, you know, the big guys are that put the money behind, you know, films that end up in theaters. So
do you think that will ever shift to kind of spread out into other places? What I'm really getting at is, do you think it will always be necessary to go to L.A.? Or do you think, you know, given that we're filming some major television programs here and some, you know, some lots of films are being filmed here, do you think that will ever shift?
I'd like to think that we can and we are. It used to be the East Coast and the West Coast were the prominent hubs for film and television production. Now, keep in mind, we've got a fantastic studio here in Chicago, CineSpace, and all of the TV shows and films are shooting there. It provides plenty of jobs for our local food community. But those shows are coming from L.A., and their above-the-line talent comes from L.A. That means that the actors, they'll usually, as far as I know, they edit in Los Angeles. But they might do some editing here in Chicago, but a lot of the finishing is done in Los Angeles. The funding for those shows comes from Los Angeles. Now, saying that, there's a tremendous incubator program here in Chicago that just started up that's sponsored by and located at the space called Stage 18.
Yeah.
And it's an incubator hub for indie filmmakers here in Chicago to work together and cross-pollinate each other's projects, not just on a creative level, but on a financial level. I know that there are a lot of working producers involved in the Stage 18 program. And I was actually very grateful and lucky I got invited to be accepted into the program there. So I'm actually like at CineSpace on their lot in the Stage 18 program, working on the 48-hour film project, but also there to network and connect and, you know, cross-pollinate with other producers and filmmaking people there to see if we can get our projects off the ground together here in Chicago without relying on the West Coast resources. So there is a strong indie film scene here in Chicago. It always just comes down to where can you find the money and the resources if you're looking to produce a feature or something that, you know, has the potential to go theatrical, either on the indie circuit or, you know, in the mainstream circuit.
Definitely. All right. So where can people go to find out more about 48 Hour Film Festival? And
yes, and
because there's still time to get involved and sign up and do lots of things. And as you said, start somewhere, even if it's the lowliest job on the film set, start somewhere, because that will show you exactly what to do and how to do it and build your confidence as you're doing it. So where can filmmakers go?
Everybody listening that wants to start out and make a short film, go to www.48hourfilm.com. /Chicago-IL. And if you can't remember that whole thing, just go to 48hourfilm.com and you can find the city link for Chicago. Sign up a team. We have 40 participating right now. Last year we had 60 people sign up for it and 54 made the deadline. That means they finished their film in 48 hours. We screen everybody's movies, but for the judges' awards, you do need to meet the deadline of turning it in on time at the end of the filmmaking weekend. But if you go to that website, all the information is there. Click through to Chicago, register your team. You don't even have to have any experience. Our participants come from all ages, all races, all levels of experience. And if you just want to challenge yourself and be proud of pulling something off on a weekend that you can share with everyone else here in Chicago, at the Music Box Theater, which is one of our most beautiful movie houses here in Chicago, think about participating because it's a lot of fun. And you'll have something cool to show for yourself when it's done.
Yeah, and they'll all be screened the 11th, 12th, and 15th of September. I will be there. You'll be there. It'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Perfect, yeah.
Thanks so much for being with us, Jerry Vassalatos. He is the city producer of the 48-hour film project here in Chicago and a filmmaker himself. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Of course, Andy, anytime. Thank you.
WGN. I'm Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And we have been talking all about filmmaking in Chicago, specifically independent filmmakers, because there is just so darn much going on here. And with that comes a lot of cool, cool events and festivals and all that. And we are joined now by Josh Shequin, who is the honcho of the Sim Festival here in Chicago, which is a really, really cool, very, very cool film festival. Hi, Josh. Welcome to the program. Josh,
how are
you there?
You?
Oh, there you are. Okay,
I'm
sorry.
Here.
That's my fault. I got I actually have to turn the volume up. Well, thanks for being with us. Well, you know, I think a lot of people have seen lots of all those cool posters from the SimFest of that very cool art, and they're everywhere. But I think there's so much to do right now in Chicago with film and all the things going on. That what is it that sets the SimFest apart from the others?
You know, we've been focused in on music. That's basically the separator for us. That's how we got started, you know, and it was, you know, in 2008, me and my co-founder, who's a filmmaker, I'm a musician. I was in a touring band called the M's for like 10 years previous to launching SimFest. And it was music. Music was the place where we felt like we could have entry into the market in Chicago specifically. But, you know, past that, it was really surprising that there wasn't anything like what we were doing in the country. You know, it was really unique concept. And that's kind of how we got started. And now it's like, aside from the music films and the live bands, you know, concerts, and now it's conferences. And so you're right, there's a lot of energy that's happening in Chicago. And, you know, we're pretty much in the center of that in terms of like a big tent festival, organizing convergence type event.
Definitely. And so if you were to sort of characterize the Chicago independent filmmaking scene, where would you start with that?
I mean, you have to start with Cartemquin, I think. I mean, they're 50 years old. It's like they're long running, earnest, I think, is a good way of putting it. I don't think that the Chicago people that are making things in Chicago, it's not about star power. It's not about a Hollywood aesthetic. It's about making things that are real and true and central to people's lives. And that's the thing that I think is pervades in the Chicago film scene. So Cartemquin personifies that, but there's so many other filmmaking and production companies that are really doing great work. And you know, I feel like that earnestness and that, I don't know, that humbleness, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just about like who's in it, but it's more about, well, what is it? What are we talking about? And what are we doing? What's the story? How close is it to reality? Or how great is it to further our conception of reality? You know, I don't know. Earnestness.
Truly.
Is like that's the place where you have to start with.
Yeah, and such a strong sense of community, and I think that cutthroat feel that sometimes we see on the coasts, not so much here, and I think that's really, really great. And so as you meet so many filmmakers in Chicago and interact with so many people, what advice would you have to listeners of how best to support and grow the Chicago film community as people outside of that industry?
Well, I would say that it's easy to find them. So first, find them. And then support them by just going to their events. There's so many different events that are happening, so many different screenings, parties, fundraising. You know, just if there is any kind of will to get involved or to support what's happening in Chicago, it's not too hard. And it's just about kind of showing up. You know, it's the old adage. You got to be in the room to make the change. So That's I guess what I would say right there. Be supportive, show up, show up.
That's excellent advice. It would be hard to argue with any of that. Well, I wish we could talk with you all night, but unfortunately we have talked ourselves silly with all of our guests tonight, and we're running down the clock right now. But what can we expect in future years from SymFest?
So SymFest just continues to take over the city. So, you know, we're in April. Our dates for 2017 now are the 19th through the 23rd. And, you know, where we're positioning ourselves is as that Big Tent Convergence event. And it's more on the conference side, actually. Mm. So we're getting, you know, aside from showing lots of great music films, films with great soundtracks, films with great scores, showcasing, you know, this last April, it was over 150 bands. You know, we're building this regional conference, and we're building a business-to-business situation that's like an aggregator for all of the energy that's happening in the Midwest. So that's where our sights are set, and we just continue to grow, and we continue to hopefully serve the great producers, the great artists, the great venues, all of the amazing talent, all of the amazing support networks, all the amazing organizations that are in Chicago. We really feel like we've got a part to play. So we're looking to continue to really have fun while we're doing it also.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, yeah. Josh Chiquin from SymFest. I'm going to send out links to all this stuff, but it's SymCIMM, SymFest. Everybody go check it out and check out all the cool guests that we had on tonight. And Josh, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. All right, my friends, you know what? To wrap it up, because we are running overtime now, and I got to get you to news here in a second. But to wrap it up, I want to rewind back to the very top of the show where our first guest, filmmaker Fawzia Mirza, said that Chicago is a very vibrant space to tell truth. And I think that is such a powerful statement and so very true about the film community in Chicago. And so I hope the message you've gotten from all the filmmakers and people that create film events and all the people that we've talked to tonight. I think the message is loud and clear that it is about showing up and is about supporting the people doing the work to keep the very talented and creative people here. That said, my friends, let's get you to news. It is 9:04. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Here's our good friend David Jennings.